Welcome to Studio Sacramento. I'm your host, Scott Syphax. What has been the impact of the pandemic on working people and small business? How are they faring and what are their views on when we should reopen and how? Joining us today are small business owners, Christina Rodriguez, Abe and Valerie Sanchez, and artist entrepreneur, Paul Willis. Christina, tell us about your business.
So I am a hairstylist here in Sacramento, and I rent a chair. And then my husband and I both own a tattoo shop in West Sacramento where he is an artist. So that's what we do.
And how long have you been in business, just incidentally?
With hairstylists, I have been at my current salon for about 4 years, but as a hairstylist, about 12. And then the tattoo shop we have owned for 9 years.
Okay. All right. Abe and Valerie, tell us about your business.
So we are Abraham and Valerie Sanchez, Abe and Val, and we own Article Consignment Boutique here in East Sacramento. We've been in business for about 10 years, and we run with a great team, and we have two daughters that also come and help us out on occasion too.
Okay, okay. And Paul, finally, tell us about how you earn your living.
Yeah, I'm a hip-hop artist and spoken word poet here in the city. I moved to Sacramento December 1st, 2011 to help start up an education nonprofit. So I have a background in education, youth development, and recently have started a business consulting around diversity, equity, and inclusion issues here in Sacramento. So I've been doing consulting for almost a year now, but my background professionally here in Sacramento kind of started in 2011.
Okay. And tell us, Paul, how has your financial picture and your the businesses and endeavors you're involved with changed since the pandemic has begun?
Yeah, the music industry is completely shut down. All of the things that I was doing as an artist and as a performer really involved people in that face-to-face, that human connection. So all of the concerts and that economy has kind of shut down. Same thing with consulting and doing workshops and trainings, particularly the kinds of trainings that I do around leadership development, professional development, that require that human interaction and understanding. All of that has been put on pause because of COVID-19. So taking a big hit in those regards.
Abe and Valerie, I'd like to ask you the same question. Compared to the weeks leading up to the shutdown orders, how has your business and your world changed? Not just for you, but for the people that you work and interact with.
So before the pandemic, we were booming. We were growing. We were expanding. As a matter of fact, we just did a big remodel and expanded in our shopping center. We opened those doors a week and a half to 2 weeks before we had to close for the pandemic. So we were connecting with people, growing, and then of course, all of a sudden down to nothing. So that was huge. We have, you know, a team, we have 5 employees besides ourselves that were had to be immediately furloughed. We took to online selling as best we can, and we've been able to capture a few sales through our website. But really, truly, we like connecting with people, and that's kind of how our store has been built. So we're struggling right now.
Okay. And Christina, you and your husband operate separate businesses, but give us a sense of the dinner table conversations that you two are having related to how your business has changed and what you all are doing about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Abe and Val, as of February of this year, we both had the best months we've ever had, ever. So, you know, it went from super high to nothing. So, yeah, I mean, our conversations have been more or less, what is it even going to look like when we are able to go back? You know, we both work in such close contact at a, you know, high risk job with people, and we can't conduct our business without people. So, you know, what does it look like in the future for us?
You know, Christina, to your point, I was talking with a friend the other day, and she said to me that she, reopening the business is one thing, but that she's so far behind the eight ball that catching up to where she was before is going to be a challenge. For you and your friends and colleagues in the industry, in your industries, and your husband's as well, is that a pretty universally shared feeling?
Completely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of us, you know, with high hopes, you know, that it'll go back to somewhere near what we were before. But in reality, yeah, it's being able to go back for one, and then who's actually going to come back is the other.
Right, so, right. Yeah. Abe and Val, when you're talking with your colleagues, your employees, other people that are nearby that are doing similar things to you all and the things that you do, what's kind of like their view of the future right now? Or is it just, you know, more focused on just surviving at the moment?
I think a lot of people are worrying how they're going to dig out from the hole that they're in. You know, there has been some stimulus money that has come through and a lot of programs that have come through, but most of those are loans. And so if we are to anticipate coming out with maybe lower sales than we had going in to this pandemic, I think having a loan on top of that is going to be really, really tough. I would imagine that in 6 months, we're going to see a lot of businesses that have just been trying so hard to make it not be able to make those loan payments and kind of dig themselves out of this hole.
Now, have you all availed yourself of any of the assistance yet?
Yes.
Yes.
You have. Okay. And has it been effective for you? What would you say about what's been offered so far?
For me, I think it's, you know, I ended up getting the PPP loan through Square Processing Service. My husband didn't get anything. But there's such a gray area on how you can actually use it and what it's supposed to be used for. And really none of it is supposed to be overhead costs. So, you know, paying rent or buying products. So maybe we're ready for when it does open. So with that, I've been paying myself a weekly wage and, kind of holding on to it. I can't really do anything with it because I don't know if I'm gonna have to pay it back. So
right, you know, interesting. You got your PPP loan through Square.
Yeah,
that's unusual. Is that the first place that you looked?
No, I tried Bank of America, which is who we bank with. No, because we have never borrowed money from them in the past, so we were not qualified for that this time. And then we tried the SBA.gov and the EIDL loan, I believe it is, and haven't heard anything. So
nothing yet?
No, nope, we got
how long ago did you apply?
6 weeks.
Wow.
Whenever it came out. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Val, what's your story on that?
So we bank with Wells Fargo, and the day that the PPP opened up, actually a couple days prior, we were in touch with our small business banker, let her know we were ready, we knew what the application would entail, we had our documents prepared, and she said, okay, I have a list of small businesses I'll be in contact with, I'll let you know when the application's available. We followed up with an email to her just so that she would, you know, have us right at the top of the list. And we heard nothing. So we continued to watch their online portal. And when Wells Fargo opened up their application, which in the beginning was just an interest form, we did that and again heard nothing. And that went through the entire first round of SBA money. And then when the SBA opened it up to some of the online banks, we actually applied through PayPal. And PayPal did come through for us. So we did get our PPP last week that was issued. So now we're able to start bringing some of our employees in and get a little more momentum with adding more things to our website, you know, answering some customer questions, doing a little more social media, but we're a little limited with that as well because we still can't fully open our doors for customers to come in.
Incidentally, did you ever hear back from Wells Fargo?
No.
So you applied with Wells Fargo, then applied with PayPal. You got paid by PayPal, but you still have never heard back one way or another?
The only thing that we received from Wells Fargo, there was a couple weeks where we would get a daily email saying, it was very generic, and it basically said, your application is still pending, but we're out of money, SBA is out of money. And even after the SBA was refunded for the second round, they were still sending that same generic email.
Paul, you are an entrepreneur and an independent artist. Did you participate in any of these programs at all?
I have not. I think for myself and a lot of musicians, our income is gig based. So it's hard to kind of prove some of that stuff when oftentimes, you know, folks are offering performers in the city $100 here or $150 there for a local gig. That doesn't encompass all of what we do as artists. You know, oftentimes if we're selling merch or like CDs or t-shirts or sales online, we can kind of account for income in that way. But a lot of my peers who are musicians or part of bands and they split a lot of that, it's difficult to then apply for a business loan in that sense.
Paul, a lot of people are saying that arts is a minor consideration at this point, and that given all that we're dealing with in society and in the world right now, that when things get back to normal, we'll deal with the arts, but it's not an important part of the equation at this moment. How do you respond to those folks?
I think that those folks are misguided. You know, I think that the arts are incredibly essential, especially right now. When you look at what our life during the quarantine is, for a lot of folks, they're turning to the arts to support their mental health during this time, whether it's watching Netflix or turning to music or, you know, for those visual artists and creatives who are just looking for opportunities to create. You know, it's incredibly important and essential during this time that we have supports for the arts. Not just for like professional artists and creatives, but also for our young people. The education system has been completely flipped upside down, and we're looking at a lot of creative solutions to support our students during this time. But as budgets get tight, and you know, the arts are often looked at as some of the first things to cut out of the budget, when really they're the saving grace for a lot of our young people. In terms of their engagement in school and in civic life, it's often their introduction into new ideas and connecting with people. So I think that the arts are incredibly important for mental health, but also for our youth and our community as a whole. So I think that they're essential.
You know, Christina, one of the things that Paul just mentioned about just the mental health of all of us right now, as entrepreneurs, you and your husband, even through this pandemic, have to deal with all the things that come with running a business. You have outside lives as well. How is it that you all are sort of dealing with all that comes with trying to manage all of these things, both some controllable, some that seem beyond your control, as you try to not only engage in what you're doing, but try to forecast for the future?
Yeah, I mean, trying to stick with things that we can actually control is kind of first and foremost what we're doing. You know, like Paul said, we're doing a ton of art at home. And I mean, we're artists anyways. So, you know, we are doing, you know, sculpting and painting and, you know, all kinds of different things just to kind of, you know, maybe that's our new side hustle. Maybe that's just something just to keep our minds moving and going and not focusing on everything that's happening. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's been rough So we don't know what we're going to do at this point.
Abe, I wanted to ask you, you know, as you both are in your shop and you're trying to figure out how to move forward, what are some of the things that both of you are thinking about in terms of how to operate your business? Because, you know, it's a highly tactile business. So there's a lot of interaction with customers, that sort of thing. What's the game plan once the doors fly open again?
So that's why I rely on my wife. She is the detail checklist woman of my life, and she makes sure that we are going to be compliant. She does all the research for us, and we have a really great plan in place to get ready for that. It has been pretty difficult over the last month, 2 months, trying to get through those chapters of, you know, online sales and trying to stay busy. We built a little studio at home so that we could use that at home. And then we have our studio here that we used for photographing. But now we've kind of shifted. Now that we see that there is possibility of reopening very soon, she's focused all her attention on the research, the CDC, all the compliances and different things that we need to do in order to make sure that everyone stays safe. And we've had so many people that have reached out that are just eager and waiting to come and support. And so we want to make sure to do our part to make them feel safe and welcome, and be able to, you know, be ready for that day when we are able to open.
Val, I'm curious about that. You know, from all the research that you've done, and as you think about reopening the store, what is it that we as customers are really going to notice or have to become accommodated to in order for things to function as well as possible?
You know, I think in the beginning, it's going to be a matter of following the guidelines the state and the county have for us, but also being really respectful of everyone's different opinions as they're coming in. You know, we're gonna have some customers coming in that are raring to go. They're tired of being at home. They think all of this is ridiculous. They don't wanna wear a face mask. And then we're gonna have other customers coming in that are scared to death. They've been home just, you know, watching fearful things for the last couple months, and finding a balance and a way to still connect with everyone regardless of what stage they're in and try to promote that inclusive environment is going to be a challenge. But that's really where he and I will be out in the front, you know, all the time. So for example, we will have sanitizer when people walk in. We will be asking people to wear masks, whether they want to or not, just to make everyone feel good. We are considered, you know, according to OSHA and CDC guidelines, we are considered very low risk. So it's not even suggested in their guidelines that we put up plexiglass everywhere or anything like that. We can do a couple minor things, you know, wiping down credit card machines when customers have used them and surfaces, or holding on to clothes for 24 hours before putting them back out. That'll be some minor adjustments. But I think in the beginning, the biggest challenge will be, you know, just helping everyone feel really included and warm and fuzzy again coming back out into the public.
Christina, likewise, you are in you and your husband are both in very high-touch industries.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you're working through right now in terms of how you're going to go about doing your business and your husband's going to go about doing his?
Yes. I mean, so it's pretty similar with both of ours on what, so far, what we're going to do, just kind of looking at other states' models. Yeah, it's going to be temperatures taken when folks walk right in. You know, they're only allowed to come in if they have an appointment at that time. They are not to be waiting in our waiting room. They have to wait in the cars. Everybody is to be wearing masks. So I'm not sure right now if we're required to wear shields at this point, but more than likely. And yeah, I mean, it's just going to be, I don't know, we're going to be spaced out. I think it's 6 to 10 feet apart at all of our stations. So my salon will be, every other chair will be occupied. With a tattoo shop, we have about 6 to 10 feet anyway in between. So we'll be okay there. But No speaking at a shampoo bowl, which is interesting. it takes a lot of it out of it. I mean, we are so used to speaking to our clients. I mean, there's a reason why they call, you know, hairstylists and tattoo artists, you know, little makeshift therapists. You know, we talk to our clients, we engage with our clients, we, you know, we create these amazing relationships with them. And I think the masks and the shields and just the whole process is, it's really going to hinder that. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Okay. Paul, I'm curious, what are you most concerned about as the world starts to reopen in terms of your work and your colleagues' work in bringing art to the communities and audiences that you've historically served?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for just these industries is we might actually be the last to come back because we're at the most high risk. When you think about concert experiences or music experiences, just opportunities to bring people together, you know, there need to be a number of precautions that take place. So I'd like to see some creative things happen in the meantime. There's been news about drive-ins across the nation that are now being utilized as potential concert platforms. I had this idea, I don't know if the city would be down to do it or not, but if we could open up some of the city parking lots to do movie nights or open mic nights, I think that could be a good use of public space and with the same kind of drive-in concept. When I look at education and just doing workshops and things like that, a lot of that has moved to digital platforms. So a lot of that's happening on platforms like Zoom. And I hope to kind of see those grow and expand over time to kind of best meet the needs of folks. But the biggest concern that I have is that the folks who don't have that kind of access to technology, internet, and connections and resources, that they get left behind. You know, I don't think that's a fair thing. The more we dive deeper in technology, I think it's one of those things that we kind of taken for granted. But there are still folks who, you know, are living at home without a smartphone, without a laptop, and they don't have access to all of these things that we have access to. So whether it's shared information or resources online, or just, you know, using apps to get what you need, you know, I think that if we can find ways to bridge the digital divide, then I hope that that's how we can move forward into the future.
I'm curious, Paul, education. Do you have any suggestions for the public? You know, all of us that are watching and participating in this conversation, what is it that we should be doing to support artists like yourself? What would you ask us to do?
I think the biggest thing is just connecting. Sacramento is super talented and there are so many artists locally. So I would just reach out to your favorite artists, anybody that you've seen perform live and that you thought they were incredible over the past couple of years, and then just ask them how to best support them during this time. I don't need people to buy an album from me every single day. Oftentimes with me, because my music is directly connected with my work in the community, I'm trying to spread messages and I'm trying to connect people with communities who really need their support. So oftentimes I'm a conduit for many of my fans and supporters to communities that they may not normally be in touch with. So I would reach out to artists and see what they need in terms of support.
Okay. Val, I'd ask you, Anade, what is it that you'd like the public to do in supporting businesses like your own?
Just come out and see us when we're able to reopen, you know, make those plans for doing that and be super positive when you come, you know, don't be judgmental if someone's doing something a little different than you are. And yeah, that's really what we're looking for. We're hoping that, you know, long run, resale is just going to explode even more so. So a few months from now, this will be a distant memory and we'll be back in the swing of things.
Okay. And Christina, I'll give you the final word. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the same thing. You know, bear with us. We don't want to do this as much as they don't. And, you know, if they can just come out and have patience and, you know, be nice and have fun with us as much as possible and just kind of make light of the situation we're in, that would be awesome.
Sounds good. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.